It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a slightly different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Paul, thank you. Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is mastering change using brain alignment. And that may not even give you much of a hint about what we're going to talk about, other than that we are going to talk about the brain. But our guest is Sylvia Becker-Hill. Sylvia's in the studio with us here today. Sylvia, welcome. It's good to have you. And we're going to be talking about her work with corporate executives and leaders. But before we get to Sylvia, if you're listening to our podcast, then shame on you. Where were you during the live broadcast? But anyhow, thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for shows with other great guests while you're there. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, or HR professionals to interview. So just send me an email at doug@thecoachingperspective.com, and we'll set you up. Well, this is fun today. If there is such a thing as normal in this business, normally I work with Paul, our producer, via Skype and the phone, and our guests are remote. But today, here we are in the studio live, and the guest is live, and I get to look at Sylvia's smiling face across the microphone from me, and that's just going to add to a whole new dimension to today. Well, let me introduce Sylvia. She is an award-winning executive coach on both sides of the Atlantic. She's pioneered new coaching models and business concepts in Germany and successfully transferred her business here to the United States. As an executive coach, change strategist, trainer, public speaker, and published author, Sylvia's passion for life and work is contagious. She brings creativity and joy to all she does and leaves her audiences always wanting more. She was the first German professional certified coach in 2002, endorsed by the International Coach Federation in Germany. She holds a MA in philosophy from the Heinrich Heine University in Dusseldorf, and a BA in administrative science from the College of Public Administration in Cologne. Wow, what credentials there. We are really honored to have you here, Sylvia, to talk about what you do. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. It's a joy to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I've had the opportunity to talk with you before at ICF meetings, and you are just somebody that our audience has to get to know and share what you're doing. So let's get going with the questions. We'll grill you here unmercifully. The question I like to ask, and I know this is one you don't like, is what did you do before what you're currently doing? What did you do before the coaching you're currently doing?
For me, I was always passionate about a core question in my life since teenage years, and that's the question, what do we humans need in order to change in a lasting way? Because to be honest, I was a quite unhappy teenager. So since my late teenage years and then my college years and university years, I always searched to find answers to that question. So whatever I professionally did, it was always like a different puzzle piece to give me some insights. What do we really need? Because I don't want to help people change for a month or a week or have big ahas. I really want to provide deep transformation. And transformation means lasting change on all levels.
Oh, wonderful. Now, tell us a little bit about, I mean, both sides of the Atlantic. You started in Germany?
Well, you might already know that from my accent. Yes, I am German. I moved here to the United States 7.5 years ago. So my business started for around 10, 11 years in Germany as an executive coach. And my very, very first coaching product was a very tiny, small, niche one. It was a telephone coaching program, which I sold to established corporate training institutes to help them create sustainability for the trainings, because there was a huge frustration in the corporate training environment in Germany that trainings cost a lot of money, and after around 3 to 4 months, return of investment dropped nearly to zero. So there was a big question, what can we add to corporate training in order to support the participants of corporate trainings to create a lasting return of investment? And there we go, that was a need I created my first coaching program for, and I supported participants of corporate training trainings over 12 weeks, once a week, just for 30 minutes, with a single goal that they implement in a lasting way whatever they learn during their corporate training. And that was a huge successful start, and 17 years later, here we are. It's evolving.
And you mentioned to me that you're still doing that kind of training, that you had a similar session today?
Well, the topics changed enormously. Today, I had a training session of 19 minutes with a group of Swiss students from a Swiss business college. They are going through a coaching training, and I'm the expert in telephone coaching provided over the phone. So the cultural challenge is here to broaden their horizon, that it's really possible to help people over the phone, because they are stuck in the paradigm that you have to meet in person in a physical shared space to do that. So I train them how to translate their modalities, models, and tools they use in person, how to do that also over the phone.
And you know, that is so foreign to us here, where our coaching programs, I mean, from the very beginning, where most coaches are thinking of just phone coaching, face-to-face is sort of the anomaly.
I know.
But and you're talking about just the opposite.
Yes. In Germany, it was considered telephone coaching when we started that in Germany like 17 years ago. It was considered something close to be suspicious, you know, like where you call someone to ask for your horoscope or where you have therapeutic needs. Or it had a very bad reputation. We had to do a lot of public relationship and education for the public to open the German minds that telephone coaching is really working. The advantage that historically it started in the in-person realm is that I see a much wider scope of models, tools, and techniques we use as German coaches, because we develop systemic constellations, for example, which is now starting to be known in the United States. But in Germany, we have a wider, broad scientific research of what you can do as transformational methods in person with people. And so that was established in the physical space. And now coaches like me, we translate it also over the phone.
Okay, so I can see we're going to have fun today. I kind of, I have a model of coaching that's called Wing It.
We don't do that. We only engineer everything, you know. We want to be the BMW in coaching, so winging is not our style.
This is going to be a good conversation here. Well, look, tell us about what is your business model today. Who do you coach, or what do you do? Who's your ideal client?
My ideal clients are CEOs, presidents of mid-sized companies who are going through difficult times of change, corporate restructuring, downsizing, fast growth, merger and acquisitions, just corporate change where the leadership style has to change in order to support the employees to embrace the change and go through it. So I work one-to-one with top leaders, and I also train their leadership teams, the director levels, the top executive levels, in change management, attention management, emotion management, and ego management, all different aspects of management they have never ever heard about, in order to really turn them into internal change agents to support themselves, but also the employees to go smoothly through the change. Because you probably know, 95% of all big corporate changes are financially disaster and don't bring the return of investment why they are started in the first place. And the biggest problem is that employees are resisting it for very, very good and healthy reasons. And most leaders are completely overwhelmed and uneducated how to manage that resistance.
What portion of the work that you do is just coaching compared to the other services you also offer?
Just coaching is really my one-to-one work, where I help people to embrace change themselves, and where I help them to answer the question, who do they need to be to master the change they perceive in the moment as a challenge? And it's not only that it's corporate topics, because I perceive a human being always as a whole human being. So when there are also transitions in their private life, let's say a divorce, or they just move from one country to the other, so the change they are facing can be quite on different areas in their life. So whatever the change is, I work with individuals one-to-one over the phone or face-to-face to help them master that change in the direction of their dreams and goals.
Sort of a sidebar question. We're talking about phone coaching. We're talking about in-person coaching. Where does Skype fall in there? Is that part of what you would call phone coaching, or is that something, again, new?
the technique of Skype, the visual techniques are getting better year by year. When it started, I avoided it because it was not good enough and the technique created some kind of distraction for most clients.
Yes.
So, and because I believe for coaching, it's not necessary to see each other. And sometimes Skype can become a distraction. So I use Skype sessions mainly for training purposes where I need some visuals and where I need to explain something on my easel, my flip chart in my home office. And I have set up like a little video private studio so that people can see me standing working at my easel. When I don't do training or teaching, when I do pure coaching, I prefer over the phone because I personally coach with my eyes closed, and I also invite my clients to do that because you trigger a different brain mode when you concentrate on your listening and close your eyes. We are living in a culture where our visual information center in our brain is completely overloaded and we are very easily distracted by what we see. And when you want to go into deep reflection about your issues, your goals, the next step, it is very, very helpful to be on the phone and not distracted by any visual input. So I personally prefer telephone over Skype.
I would support you 100%. My experience supports that also. Well, look, you know, the next question is a question that we've asked all of our guests since the first day we started with the radio show, and we've never gotten a duplicate answer yet.
Okay.
So what is sort of your guiding principle? What experience sort of set your true north for you in your life or in your business?
Wow, that is a big question. So my guiding principle in my business is sustainability. Because results for just a big aha in the moment or one wonderful coaching session, this is not what it's about. So I'm about manifesting results in a tangible and lasting way. So to create processes and sessions and models who enhance a sustainable experience for clients and a lasting rewiring of their brain. I'm very passionate about the brain. And new insights, ahas, are very fragile in the brain. If you have it only once and only think about it 2-3 times and not act upon it and not nurture that new thought, it physically will dissolve in your brain because the neural cells which were firing for that thought will lose their connections. So sustainability is my guiding principle in my business. And what brought me there, I think, is my own pain in private areas where I tried to change and where I invested a ton of money and time into workshops, training, seminars, coaches, so-called self-help gurus, and had amazing intense experiences, mainly on weekends. And then I went back into my normal everyday life, and I couldn't implement in a lasting way with what they told me or taught me. Created huge emotional pain and frustration in me, including self-doubt. Like, what's wrong with me that I can't follow their 10 steps to successful heaven? Am I too stupid or what? I mean, you wrote down the list of credentials, but if you are addicted to go from one workshop to the next and one self-help book and to the next, and you can't really manifest your dreams, it's just frustrating. It's really, really painful. And I had to work through my own stuff in order to create sustainable results. And I met a ton of people who felt exactly the same, frustrated, overwhelmed, and disappointed by what is offered on the market, and doubting themselves, not being able to implement what they learned.
I love that answer. And it is consistent with the rest of our guests. It's new and unique, and you own it personally. Sustainability.
Yes.
I love that. And I really believe it because I'm guilty of it myself. I'm an avid reader. I've read lots of books. I've got lots of ideas. And you've now convinced me it's not just my age. The brain just sort of dissolves those things if I don't take hold of them and do something with them.
Yes.
So thanks for the reassurance. Okay, so let's get into the heart of what we'd like to talk about today. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see executives and leaders making during the time of corporate change? That's a big question.
Well, it sounds like a simple answer, my first one, but it's really the biggest problem they have or the biggest mistake they make. They resist the resistance. When corporate leaders announce a big change, some kind of restructuring, or a new leader comes in, or teams will be restructured and put together in a different mix, there is a natural reaction coming from the ego of the employees, coming from fear, coming from certain human needs, which shows up as resistance, that people don't want to embrace the change. This is just a normal human reaction. And now the leaders, instead of working with that and figuring out what is the information hidden in the resistance, they resist that as well. And I would like to demonstrate something here. I know our listeners can't see it, but they will hear it. Please raise your hand, Doug.
It's my hands up.
Okay, perfect. I put now my hand against Doug's raised hand. So, Doug, I'm a symbolized change now. I will push you, and I want you to push against my hand, okay?
Okay, so this is an aggressive high five, in my words.
Yes, and we both are starting to push and push. So if we do this long enough, what will happen? Our heart rate goes up. We start sweating. If we both are equally strong, we will start hurting our shoulders. You can relax now, Doug.
Thank you. And this woman beat me, too. I'll just admit it right now.
So the thing is, when there is a push, a change is like pushing, it's trying to change something. There's a movement, and there's resistance. And resistance meets resistance, you get stuck. It's exhausting, it's draining, and nothing really moves, nothing changes.
And we all experience that.
Absolutely. So what I teach leaders is how to first work with their own ego. I call that ego taming, how to stay relaxed, how to not take anything personal, how to stay focused on their goals so that they are not emotionally reacting. Because as soon they emotionally react to the resistance, then you have typical ego fights and human brains turn back into Neanderthalensis, I like to say, cavemen trying to show each other who is the strongest, who is right, and you have the typical ego battles around the boardroom table, which lead to nothing, just a waste of time, energy, and very sadly also a waste of relationships, because that destroys relationships. So the first step is really to stop resisting the resistance, manage your own ego, which I call ego taming, so that you are in the right space to manage the egos of others. When people resist change, that is an information. There is something lacking in their brain. It could be information, it could be reassurance, it could be support, it could be resources. There is a reason why they resist. And if you as a leader are not open to figure that out and understand that, there's the coaching part coming in where I teach leaders how to be an internal coach for their employees to help them to become aware what is it what they need in order to drop the resistance and embrace a change. So it's like a several-layer process which starts always with the leader themselves taming their ego, then managing the egos of others using coaching skills as an add-on for their leadership style.
And this is something that if you are teaching leaders this is certainly not confined to the workplace.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
What a lifetime skill that you're really giving them.
Yeah. I just saved a marriage. I got a beautiful email a few days ago which made me crying and sobbing because I had an executive couple back where I lived till recently, and they were close to getting a divorce, and I coached them in the same skills I coach executive top leaders, and I rescued them in their marriage. They wrote in details what wonderful weekend they had. I don't go here in the details. I know I'm Americans are a bit modest, but it fits to all areas in your life.
How difficult is this? What kind of resistance do you get in teaching this?
Well, the resistance also is big because what I'm working on are emotions.
Yeah.
And my work triggers deliberately uncomfortable emotions. And who free choice goes into a space or a conversation to feel uncomfortable? I sometimes joke in my sales conversations, I tell my prospects, you pay me money so that I make you feel uncomfortable. And you need to be comfortable with that fact, or we can't work with each other.
I think I follow that circle.
It's just I have to push them out of their comfort zone. And by definition, growth, change, transformation can't happen in your old comfort zone. And by definition, when you leave your comfort zone, it becomes first uncomfortable. So my clients go through a phase of uncomfortable emotions and also facing some very often uncomfortable truth about themselves. because I play being their mirror. I show them how they react to change. I show them how they are perceived by their employees. And sometimes, to be honest, that's not nice for our ego to see how we are perceived by others.
Absolutely. And not only is it, and it's difficult to know.
Yes.
It's difficult to know. I think one of the most difficult things that leaders, that top executives face is getting true, honest feedback so that they know what impact they're having.
Yeah, and the problem is, as higher they are in the hierarchy, as less people they have in the environment who have the courage to tell them the truth. Because people are scared that they are knocking off the branch they are sitting on, we say in Germany. Does that make sense in your ears?
Yes.
Yeah, so I get paid to play also a role which is very ancient. Like in old times in kingdoms, you had this jester who was the only one who was allowed to tell the truth to the king without getting his head knocked off. So very often I have to be in that role to tell leaders, I'm sorry, really, how horrible they sometimes communicate and how horribly they manage themselves, because no one else could do that without losing their job. But in my case, they pay me to tell them that.
So I'm going to add to my bio now, coach and jester. So the next question we talk about is the three most important things that leaders need to understand and master in order to truly lead their teams through these difficult times. Where do you want to go with that question? Where do you want to take us?
Well, we already touched a tiny bit. Where I would like to go deeper is in the whole notion of emotion management.
Okay.
Because there is this big myth in our corporate world that business and professionalism means no emotions. And people try to turn into these functioning machines like robots. And especially when the stress level is rising, they try to keep it all together and functioning. And what they do with their emotionality is they suppress it. And that is very, very unhealthy. It can be literally unhealthy for their own body system. They can develop symptoms and diseases, or they suppress it in such a way that it explodes in the wrong moment, in the wrong time, with the wrong people, and they express it in a very unhealthy, disruptive way.
And we have been trained so thoroughly not to show these emotions as corporate executives.
Exactly.
You know, the example we saw just before the start of the show, Paul, the producer, wanted to take a photo for the OC Talk Radio Facebook page, and be sure to go to the Facebook page and like it. And he wanted to take a photo of us here in the studio. Now, I've been doing this since Paul started the radio station for over 4 years. And Paul says, Doug, can you please relax so I can take the photo? You look like a stiff mummy. Not let my emotions show.
Yes, and this is also part of our culture, and especially for men even more than for women, because it's considered to be unmanly if you show emotions. And in our culture, there are also, since we were kids and went through school, there were only two ways what to do with emotions. We either suppress them or we express them. And most people know that there's a third way, which is much more healthy. And the third way of dealing with emotions is releasing them, which means becoming aware of what you are feeling and let go of it. And there are different methods out there in our market. I personally prefer the Sedona method, very powerful, very simple. I teach it my clients. And releasing means you are not suppressing them, because suppressing means they are not gone. They are just somewhere in the subconscious mind, or worst case, somewhere stuck in your body forming some kind of diseases, or they explode later in the wrong moment. Releasing means you allow them to be, you're in peace, whatever it is, anger, frustration, sadness, whatever your emotion is, and you let go of it, which is a very healthy way, because then it's really, really gone. But the first step is to acknowledge first that they are there, that you are not a robot and not a functioning machine, that you're a human being, and by definition, being human means having emotions. And what most people don't know is neuroscience has proven that you can't think a single thought without a combination of emotions being linked with that thought. So our idea of being rational and just thinking machines is literally absolutely impossible. The brain doesn't work this way. Emotions are the glue which keep our thoughts, paradigms, beliefs in our brain alive. Without emotions, we wouldn't be human, we wouldn't be able to think, we wouldn't exist. And all great success in business, all great inventions, they are all motivated, triggered, enhanced, and created through emotionality. So I help my leaders who go through my coaching to really embrace the fact we are emotional beings, period, and business without emotions is not possible, and it's also not happening, because under the surface, I mean, go into a boardroom, the tension sometimes there, the conflicts, the ego fights, they are all triggered by emotionality, which is not released or not expressed in a healthy way, but is tried to be suppressed and tried to be managed. So emotional intelligence is a side effect of my clients. There, the intelligence level around emotional intelligence is definitely growing after around 6 months working with me.
I hear what you're saying logically. Help me walk through it.
Please, okay. You're willing to be coached for 3 minutes on the phone?
Sure.
Okay.
So I'm having an emotional moment.
Yep.
You want me to recognize that I'm having this emotional moment.
Yep.
And then you want me to logically, non-emotionally deal with it?
Nope.
Okay, because that's impossible.
Let's do it quick. It's under a minute, because I know we don't have much time. Please think of a moment in the last days where someone just bothered you. Could be someone who took your parking slot, or just think about a moment where someone triggered you.
Okay, fine. Got it.
Perfect. Put your attention on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and allow yourself simply to feel what that feels like. You don't need to label it. Just tell me if you can feel it.
I can feel it. Very frustrated still.
Okay, so please keep your attention on it. And while you have your attention on that feeling, on that emotion, ask yourself what kind of need behind that emotion keeps that emotion in place. Is it the need for safety? The need for approval? The need for oneness, being one with it? Or the need for control? Can you identify one of the four or several?
Probably control.
Control. Excellent.
Okay.
Now switch your attention to your need for control, and please allow yourself to freely feel your need for control. And tell me when you can feel it.
Almost all the time.
Well, okay. Then this is a hint that you have to go through the process probably several times. While you have your attention on your need for control and you feel it, can you allow yourself to let go of it just in that moment? You're sitting with Sylvia in front of you in the studio. Just for that moment.
For that experience in this moment, yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So now go back with your attention to your first emotion and see if that emotion is still there or has changed or is less strong.
No. Now it's sort of like a story somebody told me. I'm not connected to it.
Okay. Excellent.
Emotionally.
Okay, excellent. So depending how deep the emotion is, how strong it is, and how complex it is, you have to go through this very simple process several times, and sometimes you have several different needs which are all combined holding that emotion in place.
Okay. Thank you very much. Wonderful.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. That was a great example. How did you do out there, audience? Did you walk through this with me? You should have taken advantage of it. You'd have to pay a lot of money for this help. Well, look, don't go away, Sylvia. Obviously, you can't go away. I'm watching you. We're going to take a break for a minute for a commercial, and we will be right back. Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Okay, let's head back to Doug and more. I'm just amazed. He got to let go of control there for a moment. That wasn't easy, Doug.
I'm going to grab it right back. Well, if you've just joined us now, we're talking to Sylvia Becker-Hill. We're talking about the impact of the brain, the impact of emotions on her coaching and training that she does with leaders. And you, as Paul alluded, you missed her walking me through an example and giving me a brief 3-minute coaching session on how to cope with those emotions and let go of them, recognize them, let go of them, and deal with the situation.
Yeah, versus suppressing or expressing them, which culturally are the only two ways we were trained as kids, how we deal with emotions.
Absolutely. Now, let me tie that example in with what you said earlier in the program. You said one of your key goals or guiding principles is sustainability. So you just gave me a coaching aha moment. You taught me something.
Yeah.
But this isn't sustainability, you know.
No.
I'm going to get in the car and go home and have dinner and a glass of wine, and it's going to be all gone.
Yes, I know.
What would I have to do so that this was a true learning experience for me?
So in order for the brain to learn in a lasting way, I need this new information, this aha, to be reinforced in your brain. And with my clients, I always try to do that on different levels, different ways. One is that after the coaching, you would send me via email a filled out template, which I developed, where you summarize what you learned during the coaching. Because when you write about it, this is another processing way of the brain to digest what you learned. So you write about it and you send me that.
And more of those German procedures. Okay.
Exactly. The next thing is at the end of the coaching session, we would discuss what would be specific actions you are willing to commit towards me, your coach and accountability partner, in order for you to train that method I just taught you. So we both would write down these committed actions. And in the next session, you know, I will take you accountable. I will ask you, will you have done it or not? So by declaring a commitment and doing that in public towards me and promising me to do that, this is another layer of ensuring the sustainability. Third, most of my clients, even though at the beginning they don't like it, they have to read books. I recommend them a book. In this case, I would recommend you read The Sedona Method, a wonderful book. And I will ask you next time, okay, did you read the book? How far did you come? And we would discuss a few things if you have any questions. Another way is that depending what kind of coaching package you bought with me, I create some sustainability enhancing accountability structures. This could be that one of my assistants sets up something in your calendar with the support of your assistants so that you get reminders in your calendar popping up, for example, on your PC screen, or we can use certain apps nowadays on smartphones, for example, Healthy Habits. I use that on my iPhone. So I will, my assistant teaches your assistant to set up some reminders for you so that you do a certain amount of training, because you need around a month of maybe daily 5 minutes of focused training to really, really rewire your brain and be able to use these kind of methods really in a second, like really easy in the midst of the storm. Imagine you are in a boardroom meeting, someone triggers you, you are in the middle of the fight, and you sense how your anger is rising, and you sense like, oh my gosh, now it will explode. All the frustration you maybe had with this certain person since months, which you had suppressed, is close to exploding, and you can use that method when your brain is trained enough in an instant, really while you are in the situation in the back of your mind. And that is really the art of it, so that you can function and stay relaxed and don't take things personal and don't react like an explosive dynamite and destroying everything.
So frequently coaches are asking, do you give your clients homework? This goes way beyond homework. You really extended the coaching engagement beyond the coaching conversation.
Absolutely. The real coaching happens between the coaching conversations. It's not about the sessions. It's about what you do with what you learn in the sessions in your life. And if you are not willing to act, I will kick your butt. I tell some clients, if you are not behaving, I have to raise my prices. Because only when what you pay me really hurts your bank account, you will be willing to change. I'm not cheap because I know low prices hurt my clients. It hurts their commitment. If coaching is free, it doesn't work whatsoever. Because as I said, I need to push you out of your comfort zone. And that makes you feel uncomfortable. So you have to pay in order to be fully committed a price which hurts you a tiny bit, because then you are invested. The price of coaching is an investment into your goals, into your dreams, into your own transformation. And as more you are invested, as more you are willing to work. You pay me money that I make you work. That's the principle of coaching.
Okay, now you are one tough cookie here on this coaching business. So where is the soft, loving, reinforcing side of coaching showing up for you?
Well, in the absolute loving space I create for my clients, where everything they bring to the table, all their topics, all their fears, all their emotions, all their goals, have a space of acceptance and respect and really love. There's nothing my client could bring to the table which would shock me or which I would judge negatively or which wouldn't be appropriate. So I create a space of loving respect and appreciation where my clients experience a space of freedom to be themselves. Sometimes in a way they've never experienced in their life anywhere else, sadly to say that.
So you've just listened to the tough love version of coaching. And Sylvia, I love it. And for those of you who aren't here with us, Sylvia is a wonderful, warm human being and not the kind of whip-wielding taskmaster that we may be painting her as in this example here. And I'm glad that you've talked about this, because I think so many coaches miss the connection of being both soft and supportive and loving and trusting environments, and also that of creating a demanding expectations, follow-through, and enforcing what the client has said they wanted.
Well, I come from my own pain stories of frustration, of trying to change something in my life and not being able to, and then paying quite reasonable amount of money for professional support, and it still didn't work. So I know we human beings, it's not easy for us to change. By the way, that's a word which triggers my buttons, the word easy. It's not easy.
So I won't find an easy button on your desk.
No.
I've never figured out that commercial. Well, look, I could ask you some more questions, but what the audience doesn't know is Sylvia and I are sitting here looking at each other, and in between us on the table is a model of a brain. So I can't resist it any longer. Sylvia, what is the brain doing here in this phone conversation?
Well, privately, I'm very, very passionate and fascinated about the brain. And most people I heard here, especially in the United States, they take a shower nearly every day. They wash their hair every day. They brush hopefully 2 times or 3 times the day their teeth. But when I ask people, how often do you brainwash yourself? They always look at me totally shocked, thinking brainwashing only in the context of spies, yeah, and torture.
That's where I went.
So exactly. So my mission is to inspire people to take better care of their own brain and to learn about it and to teach them what, when they know the brain and what the brain needs, how much better off the quality of their life in all areas is. Because if you know your brain, you can reduce your stress levels easily, you can enhance your performance, you can enhance the level of your energy. The brain is the key to literally every dream in your life. The brain is nearly a magic power force through which you can become a powerful manifestor, whatever you want in life. But for that, you have to know it. You have to put attention on it. And sometimes it needs some brainwashing. Because if you are over years trying to accomplish something and it doesn't work, it's not the environment which is standing between you and your dream, or the economy, or your spouse, or your daddy, or your mommy, or your bank accounts. It's yourself. And when people say, oh, I know, it's me, they really are talking about, it's there's something in their subconscious mind, an old programming in their brain, which is hurting them, which is standing between them and their goals and their dreams. So when you start studying your own brain and understanding what is stored and programmed in your subconscious mind, you get the power to change that. And there's this wonderful saying, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. So there, this is a wonderful time we live in. Through the internet, through self-help books, there's so much wisdom accessible for people to learn in a very simple way about the brain. You don't need to be a neuroscientist. Yeah? There are blogs out there, YouTube videos. It would make me happy if a lot of people being here on the show today would start researching about the brain. They can email me and I will recommend some books for them. There's everything out there what you need to understand and own your brain. And when you own your brain, you literally own your life much better.
So part of what you feel would be effective in dealing with change management, in dealing with controlling emotions, would be understanding your brain, understanding yourself in terms of your brain mechanical functions.
Just simple things. My clients are sometimes shocked when I tell them that the ego can get more easily triggered when they have, for example, a lack of water intake, a lack of fresh air, and a lack of sleep. Unfortunately, in our work culture, very common factors. The brain, it's an organ. It's a biological machine. If you deprive it of sleep, water, or oxygen, it can't work as properly. So a lot of conflicts we have in the workforce are completely unnecessary if people would drink more water, get more sleep, and would open more often the windows to get some fresh air.
Well, that's way too simple. Nobody's going to do that.
I know. That's the reason why they have to pay me a lot, so then they do it.
Well, let me run by you one of my preconceptions here is that I read somewhere that the brain is like a motor, that it when you're working hard and focusing during the day, that it can overheat in effect, and that drinking cold water, in fact, enhances the brain's function. Would you buy that?
I wouldn't agree necessarily with the cold water.
Okay.
Because the difference in heat creates an internal physiological shock. So I would always go for room temperature water. But I always say you can't drink enough water or too much water. Most people are completely dehydrated. So water is definitely healthy, but I wouldn't go for the cold water for just room temperature.
Okay. So what would be some of the things that I should do to make my brain function better?
Well, I would like to teach you a very simple mini exercise, which everyone here also listening to us can do right now if they are not driving a car. Please, if you're driving a car, don't do it. I call that the brain grip. It's very simple. You rub your two hands. Please, Doc, rub your hands to make them warm.
I'm rubbing my hands together like I'm starting a fire or
Excellent.
Warming my hands.
Now take one of your hands and gently put your hand on covering your forehead, touch your forehead, and the other warmed up hand put in the back of your head, above your neck, so that you are really holding very gently and nicely your head. If you're not driving as a listener, you can please also close your eyes. Doug, close your eyes. I know you want to see my smile, but close your eyes. And breathe deeply in and out. Just 2-3 times. Excellent. And then simply relax your arms again. This brain grip, if we had a machine here which would be able to create brain scans to show how neurocells fire, you would see now a different brain pattern from before. Because what is behind our forehead, I make it now very simple, and any neuroscientist on listening, please forgive me. Behind our forehead is a so-called neocortex. That is the part of the brain which is evolutionary-wise the youngest part. That's the part where we make conscious decisions throughout the day. And scientifically proven, as long as the day goes on and you are working and making one decision after the other, and we make all around 3,000 decisions a day, just thinking about, do I go left or right? Do I take one more tablespoon of sugar or not? Every of these tiny decisions counts for the brain. So in the later of the day, you experience something which scientists call decision-making fatigue. You get tired after making too many decisions. And the neocortex behind our forehead understands stress, when you're tired and the workload gets overboarding and you are overwhelmed, gets literally switched off. and then you can't act properly. You turn into a caveman, only functioning out of your older parts of the brain, which are in the lower areas, more closer to the neck. So when you warm your hands and make this brain grip, which we just did, you literally reawaken your neocortex and reconnect the neocortex with the other parts of the brain. And the neocortex is a bit like the CEO. Imagine a company and the CEO would be switched off, would be sleeping while a lot of stress and things are going on. It doesn't work. So by doing these simple brain grips throughout the day, let's say every 2 hours or every moment you feel a bit of tiredness or you feel tension or you feel stress, will improve your performance and your ability to go on making sound decisions out of a sound, awakened neocortex and not reacting like a Neanderthaler, like a caveman out of your triggered emotions to be right and show the world what a great guy you are.
What a wonderful explanation. So tell me, when you are talking like this to a top executive, how are they handling this? I mean, I'm painting a picture in my mind of the typical executive that is looking for, give me the 6 things to do to make the world better or to make me better. And you're talking something that is kind of out there and I'm not comfortable with and it sounds a little new age. How do you deal with that?
Well, that's the great thing why I'm also passionate about the brain. Neuroscience, which is in the public domain through books which are understandable for us normal human beings who haven't studied neuroscience, it's more and more out there, let's say, since around 10 years. And neuroscience gives me a framework which, let's say, sells, like a bit of like an internal marketing, sells models and content to clients which, let's say, 20 years ago, they would have resisted and would have labeled it esoteric, new agey, weird, hooky, frooky, whatever, because I can explain them why what I'm telling them makes sense, what scientifically proven the effects on their brain are, and through coaching, I let them figure out what would be the effects on their lives. So here in the moment, I do a bit more explanation and teaching. In a longer coaching conversation, I engage the client much more through questions and exploration so that they figure out, wow, when I do that, when I'm able to manage my, let's say, my caveman reaction, what becomes possible in a stressful team meeting? Ah, I see. Then I could talk with Mr. Miller in a different way than I normally do instead of, So I help my clients to own it in that meaning that they come up to their own conclusions and solutions. So I'm not teaching and giving them as much as I quickly do here in this artificial interview situation.
Okay, but I love what you've sort of modeled here today, and that is that coaching isn't just asking questions.
No.
Coaching is accountability. We all know that. But coaching might be some training, might be some teaching so that people can better understand the points that you are working with them on in the coaching.
Yeah. When I'm working as an ICF mentor coach, then I'm adhering completely to the very strict rules and definitions what coaching is and what it's not. To be honest, when I work with clients, they don't care if it's coaching, training, consulting, or mentoring. They simply want a solution to their problem. And when my teaching or my training in that moment would help them better than coaching, then I just simply switch hats. It's just important for us coaches that we are aware what kind of hat we are wearing right now. Am I now a teacher? Am I now a consultant? Am I now a coach? And that we only please put on hats where we have an expertise and a training and education for, and not putting on hats we should please avoid. For example, there are some sometimes dangerous gray zones going in the direction of therapy, where I always say, please, as a coach, don't put on the therapeutic hat. This is not up for you to do. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, look, we're getting close to winding up here. So what have I not asked you, or what have I talked over you on that you want to cover before we wrap up here? Anything else you want to be sure the audience walks away with?
I want the audience to really know that there's much more possible for them that they in the moment believe is possible. And that the key to these seemingly impossible things in their lives is really knowing their own brain. That the brain has the power and the key to unleash capabilities in themselves which they don't know that they can, because we all, through childhood situations, indoctrination, school, etc., we all have certain beliefs of limiting ourselves, where we believe we are not good enough, we can't do that, we don't deserve this, etc., we are not enough. And when you work with your own brain, you can overcome quite quickly all this old programming, and that opens the door to seemingly the impossible. And there's much more out there, as I would say, it's an invitation I want to make. Dream big, own your brain, and then use it to live that dream.
I love it. I love it. Sylvia, how do people get in touch with you to find out more about you and what you're doing?
Well, the easiest way is they would go to my webpage, www.sylviabeckerhill, one word, no hyphen, no dot, sylviabeckerhill.com, Sylvia with a Y, and read on my webpage my blog and surf a bit, so that they feel if there's a resonance, if they trust what they read and feel. And then there is a contact template where they can contact me or my assistant, and then we would set up a cost-free exploration session. There's an application on the webpage, and also if they want to give feedback for today's show, or if they want to get some book recommendations, I am reachable. I'm not a guru on a pedestal, so I will answer emails, maybe not in the next 24 hours, but I will definitely answer.
Wonderful. Sylvia, thank you very much for joining us today, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community.
Thank you, Doc. It was a pleasure.
Well, look, before we sign off, let me just remind our audience that the December 12th Orange County ICF meeting will be a lunch meeting. For those of you who have been for years going to the monthly dinner meetings, you're going to have to get there a lot earlier. It's a lunch meeting. The topic is going to be why clients don't take our advice and what you can do about it, with Michael Zelnick. And this is going to be informative, interesting. He may touch on the brain also.
And I will be there too.
And Sylvia will be there. So if you'd like to meet her in person, what a great opportunity. Let's see. What else can I tell you? If you are looking forward to our Thanksgiving show, we won't be having one. So overeat your turkey, fall asleep on the couch, and don't feel any guilt about it whatsoever. And I will see you back here at octalkradio.net in December.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.